Bilibilis, and welcome back to the Free Anime Podcast, your one-stop pod for all your anime reviews, reactions, and recommendations. As always, I'm your host, Fate Steel Taylor, and this week we're going to be taking a break from your regularly scheduled programming to bring you a special, the Re-Anime Podcast Talks, or Trap Talks. And no, I did not think of that acronym when I first started this project. So as I mentioned in previous episodes, this is going to be a more free-flowing talk, and this week I'm going to be talking with none other than Dashboard Citizen on the topic of harem anime and their place in the anime industry, as well as what it means for the future of the anime industry. Now, the following section does contain some ending spoilers to the first part of To Love Rue, as well as some vague theme, general, I don't even know if I want to classify them as spoilers for Neon Genesis Evangelion, as well as the end of Evangelion, but if that's not your cup of tea, well, just check the description and you will find time slots for all the times we talk about things. If you're looking for your regular weekly episodes on airing anime, both for the winter 2016 season as well as the spring 2016 season, don't worry, that's coming up soon. Don't you fret. And if you want my initial thoughts on the winter 2016 season, you can always go through the catalog and I have all the anime listed there and you can listen in to get my first thoughts. So without further ado, enjoy the rest of the segment. And welcome back everyone, and on this extended edition of Is It Wrong to Pick Up Guests from the Internet, we have a very esteemed guest among us, Dashboard Citizen. How are you doing?
Hey Fate, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Thanks for coming on to the show again. I mean, you did such a great job last time that I definitely made sure to get you back on here.
Yeah, I appreciate it. People are going to be a little bit hesitant covering the topic that we've chosen, but we'll see how it goes.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and I was looking forward to it ever since I saw the article you posted on your website, dashboardcitizen.com, if I'm correct.
Yep, that's it.
And would you like to talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a polarizing piece, you know, mainly an editorial that kind of it's typically not cool, you know, to go after an entire genre. I don't think, but I think there's some structural issues to kind of harem anime and that need to be addressed, and I think it's worth kind of exploring them from a more critical place. You know, that's not to say that, by the way, I'm not trying to take anybody's fun away from them. You know, I've had quite a few accusations of that. You know,
yeah. So today we are talking about harem anime, the genre that is really becoming a lot more popular as of late. I mean, it's always been popular. People have kind of been obsessed with having their own harem of admirers and lovers for as long as we have recorded history, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So this is nothing new under the sun. And but it's also interesting that people think that you can suck away their fun, like talking negatively about an aspect of a show or a genre can somehow lessen their own enjoyment and like cease it from existing. That's some kind of power you have.
Yeah. That's very generous.
But I guess before we can start to critique harem in anime, you first gotta define what we want to say harem genre is, especially because there are, I mean, I have seen a lot of people use that term very generously at times.
It's interesting. I was watching the kind of commentary on Reddit after that piece got posted, and you know, people were really, really getting a little, I think, ambitious is the word I want to use here, in terms of you know, what defines a harem, and arguing that shows like Code Geass, for example, are harems, which I think is a little bit of a stretch. I actually did some research into this, I checked out TV Tropes and I checked out MAL, to see what is kind of defined you kind of see defines a harem, and not to say that Mal or TV Tropes are final arbiters of what defines a harem, but they gave some pretty interesting insight. You do have the kind of protagonist, kind of being chased by three or more girls, kind of stuck in the high school setting, typically, not always, but they're bound together in terms of living quarters and things like that. But there has to be a narrative focus on really kind of the competition, between these girls, or, kind of vying to be this, be the love interest of the protagonist. That word competition, suggests that there needs to be a certain level of openness, in the sense that, any of the girls can win, or I guess if it's a reverse harem, any of the guys can win. The female characters feel kind of duty bound, or bound by fate. I've been watching the Daredevil series, for example, and this is kind of pulling into the Western medium here a bit, I know, but there's multiple love interests in that show, but none of the girls in that show act against their own self interest, and they certainly don't feel like they're bound to the protagonist in any way. And I do see that. I do tend to see that in kind of the harem genre, and I think that really tends to be kind of a staple of a harem genre, where all the girls, or at least a majority of them, are in some ways obsessed with the main character. There might be a better word to use there, but I can't think of it at the moment. But I think you got to be careful before saying that just because you have a charismatic male lead that's attractive to a lot of female characters, who charms a lot of female characters, that doesn't instantly a harem make.
I know a lot of people want to identify Sword Art Online as a harem because it has a lot of harem elements. But again, with that, there's more of a established relationship. And I think what needs to happen for something to be considered truly a harem anime is the main character kind of has to show some interest in other characters, For Sword Art Online, Kirito doesn't really show any interest in the other girls except for one.
Right.
And so it feels more natural. It doesn't feel as though they only exist for his indecisiveness. You kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be kind of this this openness to the courtship,
Right, in order for it to be considered a harem. And then, but while we do have these shows that have these elements, I mean, we aren't lacking for shows that no doubt would be considered harems, like a To Love Ru, like a High School DxD, Monster Musume, Rosario and Vampire, and then you somehow have seen Testament of Sister New Devil, which I don't know how that happened.
I think it was a very lonely Saturday night, I came across that show, and I think it's something I want to put behind me, I think the problem, with a lot of these shows, fundamentally, is that whenever you're creating a narrative, you really want to humanize your main character. You want him to feel like a bit of an underdog. I think it was Kurt Vonnegut that said that you really need to give your audience somebody to root for. They need to feel like they're fighting for something. The problem with harems is that, in respect to the major theme in these shows, which is almost always love, sex and romance and things like that, is that the main character doesn't really have any issue. There's not really any boundary. There's no feeling of conflict or tension, which is what I say in the actual article. And I think that really dehumanizes the character, and I think it makes it hollow and kind of boring. You know, I'm not offended by these series, but I find them to be, you know, from a narrative point, not really going anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I definitely feel you on that, and definitely get where you're coming from. So one of the first harem manga that I came across was To Love Ru, when I was in middle school, high school, so right at the target audience. And I remember reading that, and honestly, I can't tell you much of anything that happened. I was really only watching slash really reading for the occasional, I don't know, ecchi, like chest grab, panty shot that I thought was like hilarious at the time, of course.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, and now that I think about it, like, I can get why I thought it was fun, but it also feels super demeaning, and also feels like, because, and I think most people know this about To Love Ru, so I guess this might be a spoiler, but I mean, if you care that much about To Love Ru to be spoiled, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast in the first place. But with To Love Ru, like, it has, so there's To Love Ru and there's To Love Ru Darkness, which is the sequel. And what's interesting is, if you read To Love Ru, the first couple, like, while you're reading it, there's definitely, like, you know, two main girls or whatever, like, how it usually breaks down. And then, of course, as it does in a harem, and then, of course, you have these side characters who are also love interests. But you're like, oh, like, he's definitely going to pick one or the other, and you're like, oh, he'll definitely pick this one. And then at the end of To Love Ru, he just decides to pick all of them, and all of them are okay with this. And it felt so dumb. I'm pretty sure I rage quit from manga for like a year because of that. It was just, yeah. And like, you would think, like, understandably too. Like, I don't think many people could fault me for this.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't. I think that, you know, when I wrote that piece, I got a lot of response back, and you know, a lot of them said, "Well, you know, DB, it's a guilty pleasure, and it's not something that is really meant to be taken seriously." And you know, I get that. You know, in Western media, you know, you have reality television and you have late night programming like Skinamax and all these things, but
Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you don't actually. You know, the demographic that watches Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or maybe that's stretching it a bit, but you know, the reasons that you watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians is very different from the reasons that you watch Breaking Bad, you know, for example. But you know, there's these really clear, I think, delineations or, you know, truncations between pieces of media. I don't think you could very easily come across, you know, something like, you know, for example, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or, you know, late night, you know, programming on Skinamax, for example, as easily as you would come across, you know, Breaking Bad or The Wire or Mad Men or any of these shows. You know, you might come across a bad show. If you were to take the same thought experiment of having this impartial observer, you know, I think they could just as easily come across a show like Monster Musume as they could a show like, you know, Full Metal Alchemist or Cowboy Bebop or you know, any of these shows, and get a very, very, I think, biased in a not good way, you know, view of the medium as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case if you're a Westerner or like from the Western Hemisphere watching these anime, because when these shows are airing in Japan, they're airing, just like you said, in the West, they're airing at late night time slots, like 1 a.m., 2 a.m.
Right.
So for them living there, it's very hard for them, if they're watching it on their TV, if they're just like channel flipping, happen across Monster Musume, happen across High School DxD. But when you're on the likes of Crunchyroll, Netflix, there isn't that kind of filter. There isn't a time slot filter.
Right.
It's just all looped into the same material. I'm sure, like, Testament of Sister New Devil is under anime, same as Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood and Monoko Magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like you have AMC breaking out, no pun intended, Breaking Bad, The Walking Dead, and the like. Meanwhile, Shaft has its hands in both Madoka Magica and Nisekoi, though I will get to Nisekoi later. So yeah, those are really good points, and I think one of the other reasons is that those kind of shape how people who don't know the medium well of anime, why it shapes their opinion is because it's so out there that it makes it easier to form an opinion. Like if you watch a slice of life show, I don't know, let's say you watch Clannad, which does have a few harem elements to it, but mostly by the book as an anime adaptation, it has a fairly straightforward romantic progression.
Right.
You watch that and you're not going to react to it like crazily. Yes, maybe you'll talk about the bug eyes and whatnot for a little while, but that's not something you can meme and show your friends and be like, hey, this is crazy. But like with Monster Musume, of course people are going to take with that and run with it and post it on Facebook and Twitter with very little context, though I'm not sure how much context can help in some of these
cases. Exactly. Part of that might have to do with the style and, you know, kind of the confusion that, you know, people have, I think, with anime where they kind of bundle it all together. You know, it's no secret that the anime is kind of in a tough spot right now, you know, financially. Mm-hmm. You know, right now they're kind of sitting in business what you'd call red ocean, which is basically a place where with, you know, no new sources of revenue or you know, customers, you know, or cash flow. And you know, I think they see shows like Attack on Titan, they're obviously doing very, very well, and I think a lot of these studios are, you know, trying to pull off a half measure, because, you know, they see a blue ocean on the Western side, and which is why they're licensing out their shows and, you know, allowing dubbing and things like that. And at the same time, they see, you know, kind of the red ocean, which is their consumer base, you know, their current customer base. And I think you get these kind of amorphous where you have, you know, elements that you might find more appealing to a Western audience, but at the same time have these kind of weird, you know, lower brow elements, you know, a lot of the fan service, a lot of the edgy stuff, you know, harem elements and things like that, that are, you know, still designed to appeal to, you know, the audience which is buying the merchandise and stuff in Japan, because, you know, obviously Japan is still their biggest market. You know, I think it's going to be a long time before the West becomes a big player. Yeah, I mean, I think that might be one of the reasons why, you know, these types of shows are popping up. This is a bit tangential, you know, I just want to add that I have nothing against lowest common denominator stuff. You know, if I love shows like South Park, you know, on mm-hmm. on the anime end, I loved Prison School. I even love Shimoneta. But you know, those shows were raunchy, but you know they're funny, you know, and they're full of right. they're full of dick jokes and poop jokes and whatnot, but there's a real narrative there, and right. you know, the characters feel humanizing, and they don't feel like they control the narrative, and you can kind of relate to them, and you know, that they have all the aspects I think of good storytelling, and so, you know. Mm-hmm. Go crazy, you know, is as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's what you should do. But right. at the end of the day, you know, I think you should write a good story.
And the thing is, when you bring up the red ocean, blue ocean thing, what it also makes me think is, so in the fall 2015 anime season, which was by far the worst, unequivocally terrible, most gruesome season of anime I've watched since I started regularly watching multiple shows in a season over the last few years, that had three of the same light novel adaptation high school battle harem genre. Like three clones, essentially. Although people will argue over the inclusion of Rakudai, you know, Kishi Calvary. And then you also had Anti-Magic Academy 35th Test Platoon, and you had Asterisk War. And those, I felt, were interesting because I went to New York Comic Con and I got the chance to sit on the Crunchyroll industry panel. And one of the shows they really amped up was Asterisk War. And the way they ramped it up is, well, it feels a lot like Sword Art Online. Well, true enough, it did, except it only kept the worst parts about Sword Art Online, which is interesting. But when you bring up the likes of Attack on Titan and, of course, Sword Art Online, insanely popular in all corners of the globe, people are trying to strike gold with things that are similar but just don't get to the heart of what made these shows so popular. And so they keep churning out these formulas because they think they're a safe bet and they'll just recoup their losses and just barely stay afloat. But that's not how they're going to succeed, and that's not how consumers are going to succeed in the sense of getting greater stories and better stories.
You know, I think the reason that a show like Attack on Titan and, you know, even Sword Art Online, you know, and I might be ending my career here by, you know, praising Sword Art Online. I never thought I'd be doing this. Is that, you know, I think they took a risk with those shows, you know. It was a high risk, but, you know, there was a high return on, you know, what they put out there. Those first 14 episodes, I think it is, of Sword Art Online are, I'll go ahead and say it, you know, they're pretty damn entertaining. You know, they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you get the second arc, which is bizarre, but studios taking, I think, artistic risks and getting a nice turn, you know, for doing those sorts of things. And, you know, I think you have a good point in that, you know, a lot of people are trying to emulate it, but they're trying to do it in this kind of half-measure form, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not, you know, returning the dividends that shows like Attack on Titan are. You know, I would say if you're going to do something, you know, go ahead and do it egregiously. And you know,
yeah,
if the return isn't that great, well then, you know, go and do another show. So
yeah, easier said than done, right? I mean, Manglobe, the studio behind The World God Knows, just went under in the last fiscal year. So there is the risk. There's always the risk. But I do feel you on that because while, I mean, a lot of people will point out that there are some very terrible shows in the harem genre, I mean, there are some that I guess could be considered harems that I personally really love. So I mentioned before Nisekoi. The thing with Nisekoi is somehow nothing about it is innovative. I mean, it is basically an updated version of Love Hina, and then it also takes harem elements from every single rom-com you can think of. It's got your typical tsundere, your typical shy childhood friend, the foreigner, the tomboy, the little sister. Yeah, everyone who you could imagine as a character archetype, as a love interest, exists in Nisekoi. And yet at the same time, because of that, I don't know if it's in spite of that or because of that, Nisekoi is still wildly popular and still, like, I find a lot of pleasure in reading it, a lot of pleasure in watching it. It's fun. It's hilarious. And I think the difference is because of who's behind it. So the manga is written by Komi Naoshi, who's one of my favorite manga authors and artists. I'm of the belief that Nisekoi is Komi Naoshi saying, you guys don't want anything original? Well, then let me throw everything by the book, from the book at you in the form of one show, one franchise. And so Nisekoi is that, and it is egregious and it is crazy. And it's been wildly popular in both the US and in Japan. And I think one show that we both have come to love that does this harem genre very egregiously is Neon Genesis Evangelion. Now, I know you definitely have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely. I actually you might want to fill me in on this aspect. I've heard that it's kind of like the Seinfeld of a lot of tropes, in that it established a lot of the cliches that you see in anime, even though they're original when they were first done. I didn't know if you had any idea.
Yeah, of course. So I love Evangelion, and I love being able to talk about Evangelion. My knowledge of the 80s and further back anime is kind of limited, but from an early time in anime, you did have harem elements in shows. It was not uncommon at all to see childhood friends. The tsundere prototype had been done time and time again by the time Evangelion got to it. But the thing is, people so wildly misinterpreted Evangelion, and they were sexualizing the three female leads of Rei, Asuka, and Misato to such an extent where those kind of became popular spin-offs of themselves. So there's even something called a Ayanami Rei XP, which is like a purple or blue-haired girl who doesn't say anything much and sits in her corner and just says one or two words every episode and reserved. And it also started this whole thing of, so in the first episode and the first couple episodes of Evangelion, Ayanami Rei is hurt and damaged, so she has these bandages wrapped all around her arm, and she has like a bandage covering in her eye, and that kind of became like a fetish slash like a sign of kind of coolness to middle schoolers and high schoolers, which is why it's so heavily troped on in the show Chunibyo and Love and Other Delusions by Kyoto Animation, which takes a nice look at the disease known as Chunibyo, where people imagine themselves to be a part of a greater world and have these grandeur delusions. And Misato being Misato, who doesn't want to have an alcoholic, attractive woman as your pseudo housekeeper ever, yeah, right? Because apparently that's every boy's fan. I mean, so yeah, and then Asuka, of course, really emphasizing the redheaded tsundere trope and stereotype. So yeah, in a lot of senses, Evangelion was a product of things that had come before, and Anno wanting to address these particular stereotypes. Like, I don't think anyone can disagree that Asuka as a character very much exists, of course, for her own sake, but also for Anno to show, like, hey, you think tsunderes are that great? Well, let me show you how really messed up you have to be to become this.
No. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I think that was the thing, is that, you know, I didn't know if it was a parody of kind of male fantasy or just a parody of, you know, the things that came before it, but yeah, I mean, I feel like it's like, you know, Anno really took a lot of tropes in that show and kind of flipped them on their head, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the kid and the giant robot, you know, that seems cool and all in theory, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're in a war machine and you're facing a very existential threat, you know, you might die. That's terrifying, you know. And I think the same goes for, you know, living with three different women, or I guess two different women, who have serious issues of trauma. You know, it's, and as you said, you know, it's not going to be the amazing, pleasant experience. You know, they're believe it or not, they're human beings, and you know, they're not going to serve you. And they have their own wants and needs, and if they're especially traumatized, which is, you know, kind of the hedgehog dilemma, you know, that they bring up in that show, you know, it's gonna hurt, and you know, it's likely gonna hurt quite a bit. So yeah, I mean, to your point. I think that's very much true.
I mean, the very first scene of End of Evangelion is very explicit and not at all hiding what Anno feels about people who sexualize his characters. I mean, that's not left up for discussion
at all. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think... I really think that... you know, that scene, that infamous scene. you know, I really think that is Anno kind of pointing at the audience and kind of saying, like, that's you, buddy. You know? You know, I hope you like looking in the mirror. It's unsettling. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you say parody, I don't know, like, parody has like a comedic tone to it, but I don't know if it inherently is supposed
to. Yeah, well, there are varying levels of satire. And, you know, I think, you know, you have parody and then you have burlesque and, I think travesty at the bottom. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You know, it's more of a burlesque, you know, maybe leaning into a travesty of, very, very profane almost, satire.
Because one of the moments that sticks out the most to me that I felt when watching it first, how it was so different. I mean, how many times do we see in a show where a guy and a girl have to end up sleeping next to each other in sleeping bags, and the guy, like, the girl falls asleep first, and then the guy is like panicking and sweating, is like, oh no, what do I do? There's like someone with two X chromosomes sleeping next to me, I don't know how to react. And then he sees her face and he's like, oh, maybe I should go for a kiss. And then the main character is like, no, I can't do that. That'd be terrible. And he blushes and he can't get any sleep, right? When Shinji comes across that situation, he comes across exactly by the book. He and Asuka are sleeping next to each other. She passes out. And Shinji's like, oh, maybe I will kiss her or something like that. Something to that effect. And Asuka starts crying in her sleep and asking for her mom.
Yeah.
And that is the least attractive thing anyone could do in that circumstance.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it hard to imagine what else she could have done in her sleep that would have been as much of a turnoff. And it's completely throwing that trope on its head. It's completely doing the opposite of what you expect. And Shinji's like, yeah, I guess you are a little kid after all.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's perturbing. You know, it seems okay and it's playful and flirty. And then it just gets dark. You know, very, very quickly, and you know, you realize it's not the fun little fantasy land that you imagined it to be. You know, that kind of mindset has kind of flooded into places where it probably doesn't belong. You know, I don't know if there really needs to be a best girl for a show like Evangelion, for example. You know, the same way that I don't think there needs to be a best girl for a show like, I don't know, Schindler's List or a movie like Schindler's List. Yeah.
When you put it that way, wow.
Yeah. Well, that was the first thing to come to mind. So, apologies to whomever might be offended by that, but it's bizarre. You know, I think, and I feel like Anno was very reactive, you know, in kind of the way that he worked with those characters, in that, you know, you have all this build up with, you know, Asuka and things like that, and then Anno introduces Karu, and then there's like these almost homosexual undertones, you know.
Overtones.
Yeah. Overtones, yeah, let's just say homoerotic, you know, overtones. Uh-huh. I really think Anno was, you know, in many ways trying to protect his work and, you know, trying to, I think, create something that's you know, was profound, you know,
right.
and you know, which he cared very deeply about. So you know, some people might call that pretentious. I don't know. I personally don't. I think you have the right to have some sort of control over it,
especially if people are so widely misinterpreting what you wanted to say. Of course you want to go on the record and fix that.
Right, exactly. But, you know, I hate to say it, you know, I hate to put it this way, but, you know, I think the last piece of that article that I wrote was that, you know, I think a lot of people, you look at the medium somewhat flippantly in many ways. And I have to be careful here because I think this is what got me in trouble the first time around. But, you know, there's only so much capital out there, you know.
Not the least of which is time and effort and human lives.
Right, right. Exactly. You know, the kind of intangible capital, you know, that's just not money. The West went through its slump very recently. You know, the reality TV phenomenon, if you want to call it that. You know, where, you know, it's Big Brother and all these Survivor and, you know, all these shows that were unscripted, so there wasn't any actual effort that had to be made by the writers, and, you know, and it was very lowbrow, and it was very uninspired. And then AMC went out there and put out shows like Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and they were huge hits. And I don't want to eradicate harem anime. You know, I'm not looking to destroy your fun, but I think it'd be nice if, you know, they didn't feel like they had to pander to lowest common denominator, right? Because the executives, you know, want to make sure that they get a return on their investment. And the best way, you know, I think to fix that is for the consumers to demand, you know, we want more narrative driven stuff, you know. So I really think the industry is a little stagnant right now, you know, and that's okay, you know, that happens with, I think, any medium. You know, I'm not saying that anime is weak, it's for losers or anything like that. It's just, you know, I think it's going through some growing pains, and it's having a little bit of difficulty adapting.
I mean, with any industry, anime is very responsive. It was really unheard of and rare to see a light novel adapted into an anime. And then, of course, The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya took off, and now everything's a light novel adaptation.
Right.
I mean, people loved cute girls doing cute things since the inception of cute girls and of cute things. But after K-On! Took off in 2009, suddenly everyone has a show about cute girls doing cute things.
Right.
Sword Art Online happens, and now you have these remains of harems in high school playing with, like, suddenly kind of dark but not really elements with the super OP main character coming up. So now we just have to wait around and see until it's again where shows that ask us to think, like shows like that, to really regain their footing. And I am seeing some signs. I mean, the next couple of seasons of this year look promising. There's a couple of nice original anime coming out. There are some really out there concepts that look interesting that I'm excited to see. This past season had some really cool stuff. Erased was awesome, or Bokudake ga Namachi, which really wasn't like a lot of shows that we've come across in recent memory, if my recent memory serves correctly. And of course, you mentioned it, but Hibike Euphonium was so popular enough where I didn't think it was going to get a second season, maybe a sequel movie, but it got greenlighted for a second season. Widely acclaimed manga, A Silent Voice, aka Koe no Katachi, was announced to be adapted either late 2016, maybe 2017 by Kyoto Animation. So a lot of people are super hyped for that. And Shonen Jump, I think a lot of it had to do with Shonen Jump kind of being on the downfall with coming late to the party. So they used to think that as long as you threw an anime at a TV screen, people would watch it no matter what. And no matter if it was filler or canon or if the pacing was good or terrible, which is why Naruto still exists and Bleach went on forever and One Piece is still chugging along. But it looks like we're going to get some fresh blood in the next couple of seasons. So I'm really looking forward to that, and really looking forward to seeing how the anime industry evolves and changes. And of course, if we want to do our part, we gotta buy Blu-rays, wildly expensive Blu-rays, because that's the only way to get people to listen. What is interesting is in anime, consumers have power unlike they do in Western media, because you buying a couple of Blu-rays of Firefly is not going to get Firefly back on air. If 10,000 people bought the Blu-ray collection of Firefly, that would not be enough to get it back on air. But if you reach the 10K mark for volume sold over a season for a show, that's like that's basically guaranteeing you a second season. That's very good sales numbers. And yeah, at that point, like, every person counts, and when there's the demand, they'll deliver. And just like there was the demand for you to return onto the show, and you, of course, have delivered with this great topic. Who knew that the harem genre could bring up such insightful and fun discussions?
Yeah, this was my most interesting piece, at least in terms of the feedback that I got. Again, and I keep on making this point over and over again, you know, I'm not trying to ruin your fun here. I'm just arguing for a slightly higher standard here, which I don't think is anything ridiculous. I would have asked for the same thing from Western media 5 years ago, for example. And I think the fact that people are kind of intellectually examining this medium, you know, means that, you know, that they're taking it more seriously. I don't think you have to get too defensive on that. If you think I'm wrong, you know, go ahead and, you know, respond to me and tell me how I'm wrong. I'm sure you'll have some good points, and maybe there's some concessions I have to make.
Just like Ano got on the record for how he wanted his viewpoints to be interpreted, you were able to get on the record here. And if people do want to continue a discussion with you, they can always reach you at dashboardcitizen.com, and I believe your username on Reddit is dbcitizen?
Yeah, dbcitizen.
Well, thank you so much for your time, man. This was a real pleasure.
Yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.
Thank you again to Dashboard Citizen for coming on to the show, and thank you for listening to this extra extended edition. If you like this, please let me know. If you have any reviews, comments, critiques, drop them in the comment section on the Reddit thread, or send me an email at feedsteeltaylor@gmail.com. And until next time, see you, BDBDs.